I've lost his day job. Pushing paper, swinging pendulums. Anything to serve a function or to occupy some time. You gotta earn this living somehow. You're good as dead without a bank account. But it's funny how a life you felt down in that unemployment line with all that trash.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Matthew O'Brien, who's an associate editor at The Atlantic, covering business and economics. His latest article at The Atlantic is Who Are the Long-Term Unemployed? Welcome to Background Briefing, Matthew O'Brien.
Great to be here.
And on this Labor Day weekend, of course, people are talking, we are talking about labor and how it's lost its power and clout over the years, particularly in terms of its importance to the Democratic Party. And unemployment, of course, is a real factor in or a consequence. But it seems from reading your article, Matthew, that so much of the pain that you're talking about from these highly qualified people who can't get work and are the long-term unemployed, it seems like the 2008 crash started this disaster. Is that what you got from your interviews?
Yeah. Well, in 2008, we had for the first time since basically the 1930s, a large class of people in the U.S. who have been out of work, have been looking for work, and haven't been able to find any for long periods of time. That's something that has happened in Europe in the 1980s for a bit, and it's something that economists have studied. It's what they call structural unemployment, a rise in what economists call the natural rate of unemployment. That means how much unemployment can an economy have before inflation starts picking up. And so in the U.S., there's no sign yet that this is structural, but there's the danger that it could be if we don't get people back to work soon. And so right now, there are about 4.2 million people who have been out of work and still looking for the last 6 months at least. And of those, most of those are people who have been out of work for a year or more. And that's about 40% of the total group of unemployed people. So it's a huge percentage, and it's a huge problem.
And this involuntary retirement, as you remark with some irony, is this, do you think, in other words, did the labor market and the employers take advantage of the crash in as much as people that are being hired now to replace these long-term unemployed? My understanding is quite more often than not, they're younger, less educated, and they come in the door a hell of a lot cheaper.
Well, that's certainly part of it. There are a lot of different factors working against the long-term unemployed right now. If you look at the numbers, about half of them are people who got laid off from their last job. Now, when you think about who's unemployed, you think, oh, it's everyone who's been laid off. But there are a lot more people in the pool of unemployed than just that. There are people who are looking for their first job, or maybe they were staying at home for a while and now they're looking for a job again. So if you look at who the long-term unemployed are, they're mostly people who, A, got laid off, B, they do tend to be older. And then the third factor there is that a lot of times companies won't even look at their resumes. So companies, you know, there might be a stigma to getting laid off and they don't want to hire those people. And then once you've been out of work for 6 months or longer, a lot of companies have they have software that filters out people who have been out of work for 6 months or longer, and they won't even consider you unless everyone else that they have doesn't pan out. And so it becomes this trap where you can't get out. And, you know, policymakers aren't really doing anything about it.
Well, it seems extraordinary to think that, I mean, you in other words, if you were, not that you could get an interview, if they don't even look at your resume, but assuming you get an interview, it doesn't help you to say, well, I'm a victim of the recession?
No, it really doesn't. It's tremendously difficult to even get an interview. You know, companies assume that if you've been out of work this long, something must be wrong with you. And again, as I mentioned, there's, you know, new software that just, they have large piles of resumes and they need to get through them quickly. And so they just filter out people who've been out of work that long. And so you're left with a situation where people who are maybe in their 40s or 50s who have good experience and good work history can't even get an interview. And at that point, they only keep looking because they have unemployment insurance. And you have to keep looking to get unemployment insurance. But as unemployment insurance gets cut, then they have less reason to even keep looking. So it gets cut because as the unemployment rate falls, the length of the maximum benefit falls automatically. So right now, unemployment has fallen for the last year. And so because of that, the average benefit, or the longest benefit you can get, has fallen from 99 to 93, down to about 63 weeks on average right now. And for some states, it's much lower than that. North Carolina made headlines because they spurned federal unemployment benefits and they cut their maximum length to 19 weeks. So if you're long-term unemployed and you're only looking for a job, you've basically given up, but you keep looking because that's how you get unemployment insurance. Well, now you can't get that, so then you stop looking. So then unemployment falls, but not really, because there's still people who have no lifeline, basically, who no one will hire. And we kind of say, oh, well, I guess we've done our job because unemployment's fallen.
Well, that certainly appears to be the case, that the White House has been celebrating the unemployment's going down. And, well, as somebody who follows the economy, Matthew O'Brien, again, associate editor at The Atlantic, covering business and economics, his latest article at The Atlantic is Who Are the Long-Term Unemployed? In terms of laying the blame here, you've got, on the one hand, I guess, premature celebration on the part of the White House, who aren't dealing with the tragedy of these people who are, based upon what you just told us, they essentially drop into poverty. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem like the Republicans want this recovery to work. So you're there in this town beset with gridlock. What's your analysis of why, you know, not just healthcare has become a political football, but unemployment itself, you know, why the lack of compassion?
Well, on the one hand, you've got Republicans who overwhelmingly talk about the unemployed and people who are on food stamps who might have a job but are low income. They talk about these people as if they're lazy, as if it's their fault. So House Republicans want to drug test food stamps. And Florida tried this 2 years ago because they thought it would save money because they would kick off people who tested positive for drugs. Well, it turned out that very few people tested positive. Ended up costing the state of Florida more money than it saved administering all these drug tests, because people are out of work right now, not because they're lazy, but because the economy is still terrible. And we just had the worst crisis we've had in 80 years. The idea that people aren't working because the safety net's too cushy or, you know, they're fun employed, it's ridiculous. So on the one hand, you've got the Republicans who don't have a ton of sympathy for the unemployed. On the other hand, you've got the Democrats who would like to do more, but when they had a chance to do more in 2009, they didn't do enough. Then after that, stimulus became a four-letter word, and so they kind of just hoped that the recovery would take off, and they've been looking for any sign that it is. And we really haven't gotten the kind of catch-up growth we need to get people back to work. And so we're stuck in this equilibrium where the long-term unemployed or long-term employment looks like it's falling. If you look in the last year, it's fallen by about 900,000 people. But we've only created, I want to say, about 1.5 million jobs. There's no way that most or even a significant percentage of those jobs are going to long-term unemployed people. They're just falling off the unemployment insurance benefits rolls. And it looks like long-term unemployment is falling, but those are becoming discouraged workers who have just given up.
So going back to the 2009 stimulus, which at the time people like Nobel economist Paul Krugman and others argued that it was far too little, and it's always struck me as an extraordinary fact that had that stimulus been more robust and had they not made that deal with diluting it with so many tax cuts, then wouldn't Obama be in much better shape and the Democrats be in much better shape? So I guess the question goes to why did they take the, you know, the lowball route and not, you know, when they had that trifecta, they had, after all, they had the presidency, the Senate, and the House, it would seem that they were in the position to push this through and they'd be out of the woods now. I've always been mystified by that. Did you have any particular wisdom on the thinking that went into that?
I think there were two things there. I think first, Obama's political team didn't think they could get much more stimulus through Congress. They thought that Senate Democrats would balk at $1 trillion price tag. And it wasn't just diluted with tax cuts, which weren't as good as, say, infrastructure spending, but it was also diluted with things that weren't even stimulus. They had this AMT patch where they had to fix the fact that people would be pushed into this alternative minimum tax. And that was about 70 billion out of the 787 billion. So that's not stimulus at all. So A, they thought the politics wouldn't work, and then B, they didn't realize how big the hole was at the time. In 2008, in the last quarter of the year, the initial estimate for how much the economy was falling was 3.8%. And then that got revised up to, I think, 9.8%. So the hole was much deeper than they realized, and they didn't think they could do more politically. And then once they realized, a couple months down the road, that things were worse than they had hoped, the politics was bad enough that they were too afraid to go back for a second stab at it. And on top of that, the Federal Reserve's been timid. It's been less timid lately, but the Republicans have attacked Ben Bernanke and the rest of the Fed for trying to bring down unemployment. It's been the only institution in Washington that's been trying for the last couple of years.
Well, but does that mean that the Republicans have an investment in unemployment?
I don't think it's necessarily cynical. I think that they think these things are bad for the economy, even though there's very little evidence at this point. All of their talking points about inflation and runaway interest rates and this idea that there's a magical red line at 90% of debt to GDP, none of these things have been borne out. All of them have been debunked. But they really haven't changed their tune, and they don't really have any new ideas, and they're kind of floundering around looking for new ones.
But the one thing that they agree on is to stymie Obama, right? I mean, that seems to be what it's about. I mean, when we just got through talking about how Obama had his chance back when he came in, but now he can't get anything done. I mean, all he can do is make speeches, right?
Right. I mean, with the divided Congress, there's very little that's going to get done, and there's probably going to be divided Congress for quite some time. The House Republicans have a very durable advantage in terms of just some of it's gerrymandering, some of it's just where people live. And so because of those things, it's very unlikely they're going to lose their majority in the House anytime soon.
Well, if North Carolina is the petri dish, then if the Republicans take the Senate, presumably they'll have more political power and be able to pursue some more of these policies that, seem to be. I mean, that's the part of it that I find extraordinary, that when you mentioned what's happening in North Carolina, where they just, refuse the federal money. But the people who are punished are the poor. And I just wonder, in this week where people have been celebrating Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream, there's not much compassion out there anymore, it would seem.
No, there really isn't. People who have been out of work for a long time don't have a lot of political power. They don't have a lobby. They're not visible. And so it's easy for politicians to ignore them. The Republicans don't seem to have a lot of compassion for ideological reasons. They think that people who have been out of work are probably just being coddled too much, and that cutting the safety net will give them financial incentives to get a job, even though there aren't jobs available. And on the Democratic side, there's just very little motivation to talk about things that aren't broadly to do with the middle class. They know they can't achieve anything right now because government's divided, so there's not much in it for them to talk about this. So it just kind of gets forgotten.
Well, there was a recent study, Matthew O'Brien, that indicated that our notions about the middle class may be extremely exaggerated, and that I think something like 80% of working Americans, including the middle class, at some point or other, experience unemployment and need government services. And so do you think that I know the middle class is a kind of mantra for the White House, but how much of a myth is it?
Well, I mean, if you look at Obama's approval ratings right now, they're falling significantly just from the beginning of the year. So I think that people are still very unhappy with the bad economy, and if they could do anything, they should, but they can't. So they're stuck in this position where all they can do is try to make the Republicans look worse. And that's basically what they've been doing since 2010. And the question is, are they going to go for another stab at a so-called grand bargain, which they might in September? The question there is, they have to come up with a new budget for the government, or continue to pay for the government, not a budget. And they need to raise the debt ceiling again, same thing that happened in 2011. The Republicans have said they might not do that. They've made some noise about trying to maybe defund Obamacare and use that as their leverage, the threat of a government default. or default on our obligations, either one. So a lot of questions about what's going to happen in the next month or so. You know, there are some Senate Republicans and maybe the White House, too, hope to use this to come to a deal that would replace the sequester, maybe cut Social Security benefits a little bit, replace the sequester cuts with other cuts that are smarter than what we have now. So there are a lot of balls in the air and a lot of potential outcomes just in the next 30 days.
Well, just in closing, Matthew O'Brien, is there, I mean, in this week of celebrating the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's famous I Had a Dream speech and the March on Washington, I was listening to a Martin Luther King speech the other day at the time, and he was talking about the Vietnam War, of course, and the resources it was draining and how it sort of undermined the war on poverty. And he talked about unemployment and how much of the unemployment, of course, is black unemployment. But he was talking about figures that are half of what we have now, and that was alarming at the time, 4%. So what's your sense of how this might be a permanent condition in as much as you were saying earlier that the jobs aren't there? Well, what is going to bring back the jobs? Maybe they're not going to come back.
I think eventually they will, but you look around the world and there are plenty of examples of countries that have made mistakes and kept making them for a long time. Japan went through, you know, a very similar crisis to what we went through back in the early 1990s, and they had what they call a lost decade. And that lost decade has really been one and a half lost decades. In the early 2000s, they grew pretty well. But aside from that, you know, 15 of the last 20 years have been pretty bad for them. So it's not a sure thing that the economy will bounce back if people in charge keep making mistakes. And right now, we've kind of defined down success to the point where people who are out of work, we're just kind of abandoning them. And if we do that, then yeah, things could be bad for people for a long time. And that's the scary thing.
Well, just in closing, though, the other example, so if you look at Europe, for example, youth unemployment is extraordinary. Over 50% in Spain and in Greece, and average in a lot of these countries is about 20%. I mean, I don't...
Yeah, no, I mean, Europe seems pretty determined to repeat Japan's mistakes. We're a little less determined, but not enough so. But, you know, Europe is certainly looking at a lost decade, if not more, unless they drastically change what they're doing, and there's no sign that they will. We've done better than that, but not better enough.
Right, and we would have done a lot worse if we'd listened to the deficit talks and, you know, the Republicans crying for more austerity. I mean, do you think that finally that lesson's been learned?
I think the austerity obsession has passed a bit. The deficit is coming down very fast right now, too fast. A lot of the studies that have, you know, where the intellectual support for austerity have been debunked. And at this point, I think Republicans are beginning to realize that being the party of austerity isn't going to win them the presidency. They need a positive vision for how to help people's, you know, middle-class people. They're realizing that, but they still, you know, haven't come up with that agenda. It remains to be seen if they will.
Well, Matthew O'Brien, I thank you very much for joining us on this Labor Day weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Matthew O'Brien, who's an associate editor at The Atlantic, covering business and economics. His latest article at The Atlantic is Who Are the Long-Term Unemployed? We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the status of women in the labor force. Oh, having hard